Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Here today with Sandy Fries, certified life coach, behavioral therapist, and also co-host. Sandy is bringing on with us today Lee Robbins, who is the founder and CEO of Life Empowerment Enterprises, Inc., and the Reentry Club. He has also been a motivational speaker for various organizations, especially those who work in, with, and around reentry, previously incarcerated individuals. The Source Church and Reentry Club is also a station of hope for returning citizens by providing spiritual reentry coaching, jobs, transportation, and housing to formerly incarcerated individuals. The injustices result in unfair sentences and mass incarceration. Let's welcome our guest this morning, this afternoon, I should say, Lee Robbins. And Lee, it is a pleasure having you on with us today. And I was wondering if you can tell the audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to found these extra reentry programs.
Sure, absolutely. Thank you for having me, Leona. And Sandy, we appreciate the opportunity to share just a little bit about how we even got this opportunity to speak to you guys. So thank you so much for having us on your show. Well, like many people, when they get into a particular career or something that they really have passion for, they go through a certain level of pain. And my pain produced my purpose as well. The reason why I'm in the reentry area and prison reform and want to see change is because I formerly suffered from being incarcerated, being an innocent man. After, you know, having a growing accounting and tax firm, one of my employees did some stuff on the side that I didn't know about. It ended up, long story short, that person didn't go to prison. I went to prison for 3.5 years in a federal prison camp. And then even when I went to trial, I was, you know, railroaded, and it was just a painful time to experience not only the trial but also going through the prison process. But in going through that process, I realized that there's purpose in this. And I began to get over myself and get out of my anger, got out of my bitterness, you know, and I can say I can either just be bitter or I can get better. And as I was, you know, eating the same food, those who have been incarcerated, you know, sleeping in the same dorms, having the same challenges that they have, treated the same way. There were no big I's, no little U's. I realized, as God was beginning to say to me, can these bones live? And I said, you know, while you're asking me, I was still mad at God though at the time. You know, yeah, you get mad at God and you just don't want to have nothing, him to say anything to you or do anything. So I said, you know. And so he said, then I want you to speak life to them. And that's where Life Empowerment Enterprises was birthed, in prison. As I began to coach and speak life to the formerly, you know, those who are in prison, incarcerated, inmates at the time. And, you know, I realized that I couldn't do this work by myself while I was in there. It could be overwhelming. So I decided to speak life to other people who wanted to speak life to returning citizens. I call them returning citizens, not inmates, not ex-con, not ex-offenders, but returning citizens. And I consider myself as a returned citizen because the last time I checked my tax return, I was paying taxes. So I said, listen, I'm fully returned. You know, we're doing just like everybody else. You know, so that's the start of all these other wraparound services. So that's how it begun. You know, it started there in prison. It was over 10 years ago. I've come out, you know, with a passion and a fire to want to see change. And because of my entrepreneurial background, my pastoral background, my heart to want to help people and to see change in this particular area. Several services, wraparound services, was pretty much birthed from that process. You know, as many of you probably know, that the different legislative things that have been going on, the bipartisan Democrats and Republicans believe that there needs to be prison reform. That's why they initiated the First Step Act. And the First Step Act is to help returning citizens to get better sentences, sentencing processes, and have opportunities like everybody else, on just the even playing with everybody else, get jobs, housing, transportation, things of that nature. So I don't know if you want me to still continue to go, but I can tell you about each and every one of these different services that have been birthed out of this pain. Just like if a woman goes through travail, you know, her pain produces a baby. You know, and the time that she's going through that pain is not feeling good. It's not something that you want to go through. I never birthed a baby, but this is what I'm told by my wife and others, you know. So, but I can identify with that in terms of birthing the things that we've birthed.
Yes, out of this experience. And it's amazing. It's amazing the work you're doing. What was the very first thing that you really put together for the organization you're in? Where did it start? What was your first,
Life Empowerment. Yeah, Life Empowerment started recruiting and certifying life coaches, right? We started that while we were in prison. We recruited those who were experts in 9 different areas. It goes by the acronym Fresh Life: financial, relationship, education, spiritual, health, legal, investments, fitness, entrepreneurship, /employment. We recruited in prison CPAs for the financial, ex this for that. So that's the very first thing we started off. And then when we came out, we realized very quickly that they needed a support system and needed housing. So we started Vital Signs. Vital Signs is a reentry house for men who are coming out of prison, because a lot of them were homeless. You know, they get out doing 20, 30 years with $25 in their pocket and been told to go and make it with a record. Realized very quickly, you know, we needed to have housing. So we started the housing over 7, 8 years ago. Started Vital Signs, and we have 3 locations, got 19 beds, and so when people come out, they get a chance to have a safe place to start, you know, moving forward in their lives. From there we birthed, then we realized they needed to get jobs, because we didn't have no funding. We were paying for this out of our pocket. We didn't have any government funding or nothing like that to pay for these houses. I was just an idea, and I quickly realized there's a business side of this too, and I can't continue to pay for this out of my own pocket. So, we said, okay, we don't have any grants, we don't have any funding. Well, the guys got to go to work, so we helped the guys get jobs, and then that took place. Then we're like, okay, they're gonna have to get to work. Well, I tell you this story. When I was working, I actually came out, got a job working for the state with a record, working for the state of Georgia, and ironically, working in probation and parole, right? I'm working as a community coordinator, not an officer, right? And they hired me because of my experience of being in prison and working with reentry, right? And this is a government, a governor initiative position that was created by the federal government, basically to have a pilot site to see what happens if you had community coordinators that connect them to resources, connect returning citizens to resources. Would we get better outcomes? Well, yeah, that was a 6-year project situation, and I worked 3.5, 4 of those years on that, and it turned out successfully. That's where the First Step Act was birthed. Out of the project here in Georgia, where we you know, as community coordinators, we'll go out there, build resource capacity, relationship capacity, connected the dots, because people were like working in silos. And so I got that wonderful job, you know, with benefits and everything, working for probation, had my office there, state job, doing well, you know. And then I started ear hustling when one of the probation officers were talking to a probationer. And I was just ear hustling, you know. I'm like, what is he going to say to him? He said, listen, I am going to violate you if you do not get to this office and so I can have a meeting with you. And this person did not have transportation in our area. We did not have public transportation. This person had to catch a ride from somebody or catch Uber or Lyft. So I thought about, what do I need to do to help people like this person? And I started something called Uplift. Uplift stands for Uber plus Lyft. Uber plus Lyft, I have a partnership with their software and with them to give free rides for returning citizens to get to their probation office, to get to, you know, special classes, to get to court cases. The kind of in the area, in the county I live in, we didn't have public transportation, so we had to partner with Uber and Lyft to pay for that. And United Way was one of our sponsors to pay for that. And that's when we started Uplift. Then there's some other things, and then we quickly realized that, okay, there are not people out there hiring returning citizens. What do we need to do about that? And so we started our staffing company, but I realized that it would be a conflict of interest if I stayed with the state job at this point. I needed to go ahead and resign and make sure we did things in integrity and character. And I gave up my job in order to go out and seek jobs for returning citizens. So I talked to employers who will hire returning citizens. And I believed that I could do that, and I was doing that, and people were, you know, coming onto my staffing company called Safe Staffing. Safe Staffing stands for Spiritual and Financial Empowerment Staffing. And basically, we hire nothing but returning citizens to work at different work sites and to help them to move forward.
Can I interrupt for a quick minute? How many organizations or foundations do you have, Lee? It sounds like you mentioned maybe four or five different programs.
I'm All Things Reentry. All Things Reentry. We have the church. I'm a pastor of church, and we started that when I got back out too. But we got about five or six major organizations. We have a staffing company, a reentry housing. We got a transportation system. We got life coaching. We got the pastoral. And right now we're dealing with something called Tackle the Shackles. I'll tell you a little bit about that.
Is this like, is it faith-based? Is it all under one umbrella, or is it different separate foundations or organizations?
Separate. They all separate, all incorporated, but they work together under the umbrella of Life Empowerment Enterprises.
Now, do you network with advocates around the country or around the state? Or is the programs that you have,
Absolutely.
Is it basically just for your state, or is it for the nation?
It's for the nation. We have been scaling up throughout the country, because this is a national issue. Prison reform, reducing prison recidivism, which means reducing the time that people go back to prison, is a national issue. It's a national problem. We had 70% of the people go back to prison. We had 2.2 million people incarcerated in the land of the free. 2.2 million people incarcerated. We got actually more people incarcerated in the United States than all the countries put together.
Exactly.
So I do
the interviews with Mariam Jacobs from the Netherlands and Sandy every Wednesday morning at 9:00 Eastern Time. We talk about exactly that, the comparison between the other states in the United States and the United States compared to other states, other countries around the world. We've had Franz Kurz on from Germany, Mariam Jacobs. We've had Jan Bannings on from the Netherlands. And as you said earlier, the problems are nationwide. The problems are all the same, but every state operates differently. The penal system operates differently. We need to, when I first founded New Vision Organization in 2004, we were trying my focus was trying to get consistency around the country. We live in a country that is so divided, but the problems are still all the same in every state. And this is what is a real problem. I also wanted to say, when you were talking about your background, your imprisonment and all of that, and Sandy talks about her, one of the things I noticed, it seems like most advocates have had some kind of negative experience in their lives pertaining to some kind of abuses or incarcerations or, you know, and all of these different things. But I just wanted to ask about that, because most advocates, they usually have one or two organizations, or they have something under an umbrella. But for you, you have all of these separate. So these are all separate nonprofit organizations.
Yeah, we have. They all work together in concert. We wanted to definitely keep them separate for their own entities, because these are all functioning entities, you know, with employees and people working in these organizations. I founded them, and also an operator in you know, all of them. So it's starting to scale up. Each and every one of these things, Uber and Lyft is in different places. Housing, we give our life coaches who are certified the blueprint of everything that we do. So if they're in Washington or wherever they are, they can take the same blueprint that we have here in Georgia to where they are and kind of make sure they tailor make it to their community where they are. You know,
Do you work at all in conjunction with probation offices or the prisons or anything like that? I noticed another thing I was going to say, when I had New Vision Organization previously, this was national initially. I had connections with the probation officers in some of the states. And what they would do was, if they had, and we were doing virtual then too, but some of them were going to prisons. But one of the things that they did was, they, when someone was sent to court for DUI or for you know, minor fractions like that, they would they would refer them to us to do community service hours. And we had a worksheet where the person would have to fill out the worksheet as time, putting in the time that they did and what they did, in order to get the probation officers to work with them. These are some things. I was wondering if you do anything like that.
Absolutely. Coming from probation and parole, we built a lot of good relationship with law enforcement, with the probation officer chiefs. So they know what we do, because we did it on the same with them, providing these services for them. And also the county jail. We have a coalition that meets there. People that are in the community that meet there with wraparound services, they network right there at the jail. So we have a connection to the jail as well as the prison. What we do is we go into our life coaches. Like, they're the ones that kind of quarterback all of this. They go into the prisons when, you know, pre-COVID, and life coach, do group coaching as well as individual coaching with the resident there. And found that that's been very effective, because we're able to build relationships before they come out, and then we're able to connect them to another life coach or housing or some kind of wraparound services. Not just ours. We're connected to a community of wraparound services, so we have a strong referral program referring people to other places, other housing, other jobs in other places. So this is working on a national level. With what we call, our latest thing is called Tackle the Shackles. Tackle the Shackles, as you said, it's important to do it on a national level. So Tackle the Shackles is a national coalition working with the NFL, when I saw the NFL football players reluctantly taking a knee, you know, many of them wanted to do it, but they didn't want to lose their jobs and doing that at the same time. My heart kind of went out to them, and they wanted to participate in social justice, but they didn't want to lose their job doing so. So I started Tackle the Shackles to give it to them so they could become ambassadors for change. And since then, we've gotten about five NFL football players. Buddy Curry, one of them, here in Georgia. He played for the Atlanta Falcons, and he's one of our lead ambassadors. He's actually coaching returning citizens, and he's also a part of this national coalition of, you know, former and current NFL football players who are setting up chapters throughout the United States. So it's going to be a time of education for people and community change, but also fundraising, because we want to be able to empower the providers in the different states, in the different places, to help their returning citizens. And so that's what Dr. Shackle says has become. Mm-hmm.
I noticed the NFL, this is another thing I often wonder about. We have so many, athletes that are professional players, and you mentioned them being afraid of losing their job. I don't know why they would be afraid of losing their job when they're bringing money to their bosses. But one of the things is the celebrities, the football players, they talk about the social injustice. They talk about the criminal justice issues, the law, the police brutality and all of these things. I sometimes wonder, I know they have their foundations where they, the children, they have them for the criminal justice, they have them for these things. But I don't think enough of them are putting in enough to help. They're not out there publicly except for Van Jones and Brian Stevenson and John Legend. You know, those are the ones that are coming forward. I'd like to see more of our professional players and more of our celebrities coming forth. And Kim Kardashian, I'd like to see more coming forth about these issues.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now, with this pandemic we have, there are prisoners across this country. And you talk about 2.5 million or 2.2 million in mass incarceration. We talk about this all the time because the United States is the only country in the world that has mass incarceration. They're the only country in the world that has 2.2 million, whereas other countries, I don't think they have 100,000 or 200. The recidivism rate is very low in other countries, yet it's very high in this country. So there's a major problem. This is why I believe celebrities, athletes, professional people need to come forward, and they need to put more into this, whether it be more activity into it or more money into it. Since this pandemic, prisoners across the country, there's a lot of them that are being kept in this. This has been over a year now, that have been detained in their cell 22 to 24 hours a day. No animal in their cell, in their cage that long. Then they have their properties taken from them. They don't know what's going on the outside. The visits have all been suspended, but yet drugs are still getting in there because prisoners are still getting high. And then we have these people that have their televisions, their Bibles, their books, their law books, everything taken from them. How are they keeping sane? And we have to look at our politicians, our political leaders, who are taking their sweet time about getting in and doing something about it. Then we have a biased media. We have media outlets, reporters, journalists. They are so slow to report the injustice being done to the incarcerated, but yet quick to talk about it if there's a riot or a hunger strike in the prison.
Right.
That's why you mentioned these celebrities, these athletes. I encourage them to get more involved if they're seriously wanting to help, because there's been suicides across the country. A lot of suicides in prisons, and some of them alleged suicides, and they're more than that. And something needs to be done about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
that's what Dr. Shackles is for. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was going to say another major issue. I struggle with those who are mentally ill that are incarcerated, because that's, that. The COs and prison staff, they're not trained for that. And also those that are addicted, have addiction issues. They should be rehabilitated. As I believe everyone who is incarcerated should be given the chance to rehabilitate.
But Sandy, you mentioned that training. It's not about training so much. It's about compassion. I don't care if you're a CO, if you're an official, if you're a police officer. You have to have some kind of heart. You don't want it to happen to your own loved one. So why abuse? Why set up? Why put people on solitary confinement or restricted blocks when they have done nothing wrong? And there's plenty of them that have. If training is necessary in certain cases when there's riots and things like that. But when it comes to people purposely afflicting, prosecuting someone else for nothing, this is a major problem.
Absolutely. It is. This is why Tackle the Shackles has really been birthed. We lead with our veterans, right? Our veterans are incarcerated. 10% of the people that are incarcerated are veterans, right? And they are losing their freedom by preserving ours here. Because when they go on the battlefield out there, they get PTSD. Sandy, you just brought that up, mental illnesses, and then they go into substance abuse issues. And over 60% of the people that are incarcerated are from those two things alone, you know, mental illness as well as substance abuse. And 10% of those are veterans. So only 1% of us serve, in the military. So they're out there protecting our freedom, and we're incarcerating them because of, some of the mental illness and the substance abuse and things of that nature. So what we have to do is really be what you just said, start being compassionate about that, and compassionate about just people in general. There are people who over 30% of the people that are incarcerated are they found to be innocent. That's ridiculous. And there are some people on death row because they're innocent and they are on death row. So these things, I think if the community, the culture, if we bring about culture change and make it trendy, which Tackle the Shackles is about doing, is making it trendy to help returning citizens, to help people like this, to have a heart, to be able to see, wait a minute, that's your uncle, that's your dad, that's your brother, that's your sister. Those are the ones these are people that we're dealing with. They may have made a bad decision, but why do you have to be defined by the decision that you made in the past for the rest of your life?
I love that you said that, Lee. Love it. Mm-hmm. Go ahead. I'll finish. I'll say after you finish.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying, I'm not trying to sell Tackle the Shackles, but we need organizations like this that will begin to go and deal with legislation, because that's what Tackle the Shackles. We want to bring the legislators. We want to bring the police. We want to bring preachers. We want to bring faith-based community. We want to bring, even a participant, returning citizens, together in one place, and let's do something about this, because this is a big issue in our country, and unless we proactively, intentionally bring about change, change will never happen in this area because people just don't care.
They blame it all on training, and to me, training is the least of it because the majority of things happen. And you mentioned military. My family was all military, from my father right down to my brother that just passed away from the coronavirus. They were in Marines. They were in Air Force. They were in Army, even two sisters. But one of the things is prisoners should not be stereotyped, because one of the things that I find, too, from my own experience as well, is that a lot of these prisoners were victims before becoming offenders. A lot of them violated children. They held it in for all those years, and finally when they let it out, they either let it out to the wrong person or they let it out and something major came down. A lot of them were college students. Talk about prisoners as though they're just illiterate. And they have these GED programs and all these small courses that they can take to pacify the people that are funding the penal system. There's a lot of educated people in prison. And like you say, there's a lot of veterans. There's a lot of people that are in for there was a mother recently on Facebook that said that her son is back in prison for drugs or something, and maybe it's better that he stays in prison because he won't be getting in trouble. And Andy knows, no child is born bad. And something along the way has to happen for these children to fall, to stumble. And a lot of God's property, a lot of God's people, are people that have been made to stumble. And I bring this up all the time, like with Moses being a murderer. And Paul, before Saul, before he became Paul, being a persecutor of all the Christians. Even King David, not only impregnating his servant's wife, but also having a child. These people God used in a major way. So when they talk about prisoners like they're garbage, and that's what a lot of the prison officials do. They bring them down. They prevent them from succeeding. And then these prisoners, when they file to try to get commutation or parole, they're denied because they're not involved in programs. So this is another issue that needs to be addressed.
Well, yeah, we cannot just, you know, in the prison system, they it's one shoe fits all in their mindset. If you're in here for a tax crime like I was in there for, just a paper crime with no money attached to it, to a murderer, you're all the same in their head. Right. And so they treat you all the same in that sense. But look at myself. I had a Master's of Divinity degree, a business computer information systems degree, over 15 years of running a corporation, a pastor of a church. All right. And I went to prison for a paper crime, 3.5 years, and was innocent. You know, and so they you just can't lump everybody into the same. But I understand that it's just stress-free for them to just lump everybody the same way, treat everybody the same way, and that treatment is going to be bad because you're bad people. And we're going to – it's more punitive, you know, than rehabilitative. So it's important that society understands that the more of the people – who are out here are experiencing people in their families going to prison and people that are close to them going to prison, even themselves going to prison. We seem to have a kinder, gentler society now, more and more as we see more and more people get incarcerated. And I think that's what it's all about. It's about trying to give everybody a record so we can control you. Now, this is what a lot of people don't see coming. Leona, I don't think people see this coming, and I actually work for probation and parole. They're shifting, yes, from mass incarceration into mass supervision. See, they've gotten smarter with this. This thing really started from Jim Crow, really, shifting into now prison mass incarceration. Now it's shifting into mass supervision. It's a little bit smarter now. Now we're going to have you to pay for your housing. We're going to have you to pay for your food. Yeah, we're going to let you out, but we're going to keep an officer on you 24/7. We're going to make it difficult for you to really succeed so you can continue to violate and continue to keep our prisons filled and continue to pay for probation and parole because it's about money. Now, I know our folks ain't going to like me when I say that, but I'm telling you, this we got to keep our eye on this because it's shifting from mass incarceration to mass supervision. In Georgia, we got they stay on probation and parole for over 10 years. Why? Why? You got somebody watching you for 10 years. You're going to make a mistake, and that's why that recidivism rate is up 70% and above. You know, nationally. So it's not about just a second chance we're giving them. It's about a better chance because they never had a first chance in many of them coming out of, I think you mentioned, Leona, they might have come from households that were broken homes or they were living in foster homes. You know, 1 out of 4 of them come from foster homes. So they never had a first chance. And so that is preyed upon, unfortunately, in a systemic way, to cause people to continue. It's not a white thing or a black thing. It's a green thing. It's a financial thing to keep people going through our jails and prisons and now mass incarceration. It's really crazy.
It has become a business. We have another caller. Want to state your name, please?
Yeah, it's Pionk. How you doing?
Pardon?
I wanted to comment on this reentry club. And I was going to come at it from a different perspective. Your politicians, especially at the federal level, helps to instigate these conditions with their policies on immigrants. I was speaking to Danny Davis, the congressman for Chicago, Illinois congressman for the district that includes the city of Chicago. I asked him, I said, with so many American, U.S. citizens that's incarcerated, and I made mention of the 800,000 black male and female, should not they be given the resources and tools to rehabilitate themselves so they can come back into society and be productive, rather than opening your doors to those crossing the southern border, any other border, illegally? You know what his answer was? He said there's room for everybody. Now, when you have people like that, that these populations are going out voting for, and they are carrying that type of attitude and position on policies, which is really detrimental to what you were trying to talk about, then how can there ever be any change?
I agree with you in a way.
Think about it.
I'm wondering though, what to me it shouldn't have anything to do with immigrants, because there is room for everyone. It shouldn't have anything to do with these politicians, political leaders, federal or state, to prevent reentry or to prevent, let's say, appropriate sentencing rather than give the max, the harsh sentencing. As I said, I interview Marion Jacobs from the Netherlands, who talks about the differences in the prisons. They don't even have these cold steel bars and walls in other countries like they do here. The mentality of this country is all about hatred. It's about racism. It's about anger. It's about retaliation. It's just a cold country. And whether immigrants can come on, there's a wall or not, it shouldn't even matter. These political leaders nationwide should be making decisions. Okay, some of them have spoken about doing away with the harsh sentencing of life and life without parole. But yet, as soon as a few constituents put up their anger and complain about it, they're ready to drop the idea. So who's leading, their constituents or them? We have weak leaders in this country who are too afraid to make a move, or we have leaders in this country that are too cold-hearted to make a change, and that's the problem we have in this country.
Well, I can answer the question on that. It's the constituents that's the victims. So quite naturally, they are going to complain. Leaders, elected officials, are sent to do a job that the constituents are supposed to give them marching orders on. Now, on the issue of illegal entry into the country, that's not following the rules. John F. Kennedy said, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. People that come into country are supposed to be adding to the United States, not taking away from. And U.S. citizens come first. That's what's written in the Mexican Constitution. Read it. We like to compare things that benefit our conversation. But when you compare countries, like to the south of the United States, Mexico, their constitution says that the executive can't expel anyone from the country at will without court supervision. Wouldn't it be nice if the U.S. president had that same privilege? Anyway, I just wanted to add that. Thank you.
Well, I was going to say, I was actually born on Cape Cod. I was born 7 miles from the Kennedy compound. And when he brought over the Freedom Riders from Arkansas, one of my best friends was a Bell from the Arkansas. But one of the things is, when we talk about constituents, we can't forget that the constituents were also in prison when they were out. And they took away, because these people made a mistake or made mistakes, they took away their voting rights, which to me, no other country does this either. So they talk about taking away the citizens of the United States, they take away their voting rights. When you come down to these immigrants that are coming over here illegally, look at what happened. They were working for the president in Florida. at the time, when all of this stuff was coming out about the wall being put up, it all came out in the news. These people were working for the president for dirt. There was a time when they weren't getting their own citizens in this country to work, to take these menial jobs. So they used to have to bus them from like New Bedford, Massachusetts, and places like that, to bus them to miles away to take on these jobs that the people didn't want to take on. So a lot of these immigrants were coming over at the hands of political leaders that were sneaking them in so that they could do these jobs for them. So we have to, the whole dynamics of this world is so complex that people just pick and choose the parts they want to look at. But they need to look at the entire picture, because there is so much more than what they're talking about, than what they're comprehending, than what they're saying. Now, what's going on in the prisons now, if you notice, everything is virtual. You have to set up video visits. You have to pay for those video visits. The visits, personal visits, have been on suspension. But when they do get to finally meet with their loved ones, it's going to be between glass, whatever they call that, that glass that they have between them. They're taking their mail. They're copying the mail. They're giving the prisoners the copies, and they're keeping the originals. Now, all these things that they're doing are slowly trying to take away everything that they can from these prisoners. They're trying to separate them from all contacts outside the prison. So all of these people in prison now don't have that contact, that physical contact. They don't have that humanity in the prison to be able to feel like anything but zombies. This is unless the political leaders step in, unless the media starts speaking out. This is going to be so bad that we're going to have prisons full of dead people walking around like zombies. And that's what it is, dead people. Their minds are going to go, their physical body is going to go, and they're going to be like nothing but the animals, dead animals that are smelling the place up. I get so upset because everybody makes excuses for the type of people in prison. They forget that these people, at one time, they worked, they put into Social Security, they pay their dues. They're American citizens that are considered no longer American citizens. Where does that leave their families on the outside that had them, that were related to them?
Yeah.
Nobody has the right to take away anybody's voting privileges when they were born and raised in this country.
Yeah. Yeah. You're exactly right. And when I think about how Georgia was founded, it was founded from a prison colony. That's how Georgia got started, as a prison colony. And when we think about what, the comparisons or the relationship between those who are coming over illegally and those who are still here not being taken care of, there, the way I look at that is that it's almost like in your own household. Your own household, you want to take care of your own family first. And, yes, you do need to do that because, love starts at home, all right? And then, but that doesn't mean I can't go up the road and help a neighbor, too, after taking care of our house. You can walk and chew gum at the same time. And I think we play one thing against the other when we can do both. This is the land of the free. This is a prosperous nation. Everybody that came over here, we came from somewhere except the slaves. And so what we have to do is, remember where we came from. Remember that, we got an opportunity over here. But it has to be done right. It has to be legal. Yes, we do need to take care of those that are here in our own household first. And then we can take care of the neighbor, too, if we've got our priorities straight. That's kind of how I look at it. That's just the way I. I just really believe there's a lot of injustices for financial reasons. There are some things that are going on in the prison, the prisons and the justice system. So like for instance, some of the things that were the product that's in prison that's being made by companies, right, are made by private companies, and they're making them with cheap labor in prison. And guess who got stock in those companies? You got judges. You got prosecutors. You got people got stock in those companies, so they got to get a certain quota. Can I just tell the truth? They got to get a certain quota of people in prison in order for them to get their stock worth, get their money. So it's like it's a business. It's become so financial. The Bible says the love of money is the root of all evil.
Exactly.
Now you know, I don't want to, you know, one of the things that, you know, he that winneth souls is wise too. So we got to make sure that we say, okay, we're not going to throw rocks at you. I think there's a process of change. And I really believe this is why I created all those different wraparound services. I believe it starts with the individual. If you don't want to go back to prison, don't go back to prison. Don't get yourself back into those same people that you played with, you know, before you went to prison. And don't go back to those playgrounds. Take control of your life. You're not, you know, you can, like me, things can happen to you or they can happen for you. I have chosen to allow this to happen for me rather than just to me. I could have got better, but I decided not to. So we have to take control of in our own hands too and make the best of every situation we have. Even when the odds are against us, you still can be the head. You still can lead, and you can still, if they don't give you a job, create one as long as it's legal. You have organic ability to start your own business. Start it. It's in America. This is America. Work hard, and you will succeed.
You know what I see happening? A lot of these prisoners, when they go out of prison, they don't realize their talents until they're in there. I have had prisoners drawing pictures. I have had prisoners writing poetry. Prisoners have singing ability. They have all these gifts. They could come out and websites are free
precious.
Nowadays. You can have a free website. Put up your photos and put Cecilia Conley. Mm-hmm. She has Design Conviction. She receives mm-hmm. photos that prisoners have done to put on the website. But they can make money just like you say, being their own boss.
Yeah, yeah. They have the organic ability to do so. And that's what we, in our staffing company, it's a 3-tier staffing company. We help them get a job to stop the bleeding. We help them develop a career through certifications. And then some of them, they're going to become entrepreneurs. So we put them in an apprenticeship program, right? So they have the organic ability to run a business and never went to college, right? If you had a drug deal, if you had a drug business, right, you were CEO of that drug company, and you had you knew to give incentives or free drugs to people to get them hooked on it. You knew to also develop franchises by having runners for you. You knew how to watch over your business day and night and work hard over your and watch your product and watch your territory. You're territorial. You knew how to market your business. Hey, take your skills and use them to run your own business, but just make it legal, change the product, and watch your life. I've seen many of them. I got many of them in my book that I'm writing, that success stories of people come out of prison becoming multimillionaires. So it's there. It's there. And all we need to do is just kind of give them a helping hand when they come out, and then they can make it. They can make it themselves if we just kind of help them in that, you know, in that process. You know, so
yeah.
I know we can do it, and I know as a society we need to do it because they're coming out. 98% of them coming out. We got to do it.
I was going to say also writing resume, helping them write resumes, and writing letters mm-hmm. to thrift shops, not for us to send to the thrift shops, but I used to help prisoners write their resumes, and then I used to write letters for them to take to the thrift shops, asking for the people at the thrift shops to allow them to have some free clothing so that they can be presentable when they take that resume and they go job hunting. So these are some of the things that some organizations should start, you know, including in the work that they're doing in reentry, is helping with the resumes and also write letters on their behalf to get some free clothing or whatever it is they're going to need to look presentable when they exit.
Yes, that's important, and employers need to know this. And instead of just saying, well, our insurance is going to go higher if we hire a returning citizen, do you not know that you can get bonding insurance with that returning citizen is bonded, did you know that you can get a tax write-off because of a returning citizen working for you? And, you know, did you not know that some of the people that are going to be working are going to work hard because their freedom might be on the line? Unlike some other person, like I can pick and choose and have a menu. I want this job. This one is paying more than this one. I'm going to get this one. I'll quit you to go to this one. Have all these different choices. Well, a returning citizen may not have all those options and choices. They got to get a job or they're going to be going back to prison. So you got to dedicate it, even though it's forced dedication, you got a dedicated worker there. And if you got apples to apples, they got the skills and ability to do it, or if you train them, listen, you got an excellent employee that's going to bring something with them, you know, to help your bottom line. So it just makes sense for employers to hire returning citizens and to help out. And at the same time, they're reducing prison recidivism, they're reducing crime, they're increasing taxpayers, right? Instead of paying for them to house people and taking your tax money to pay for them to be incarcerated. It just makes dollars and cents. It does.
Years ago, they used to have what was called the CETA program or job partnership, and I think it was Reagan that got rid of it. But it allowed for people, even single-parent mothers, you know, raising children, they allowed people to get jobs through the job partnership. And as you said, they would pay a portion, and the government would pay a portion to hire these people. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to say, too, there's a lot of philanthropists out there who are for reentry and all of that. I don't know if people are aware of it. There's also temp jobs in all states. So applying at these temp jobs, you can find them on the internet. Temp jobs gives them at least an opportunity sometimes to get some kind of work in the meantime. But there's a it's called HIRE, HIRE, and they used to have that. I'm pretty sure it's still going on, but in all the states where they helped with jobs for reentry, they helped with jobs for prisoners coming out, and they also helped with bonds and bails. And again, I don't know if it's still there, but it's being capital letters with a period between each letter. And that's they used to do a lot of things like that. I don't know if they did it in conjunction with other nonprofit organizations, but it's worth checking in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
I would like for you and also Sandy now and then at the end of the show, because we still have 35 minutes left. But if you can give the audience your contact information and Sandy the same, how they can contact you, how they can help in any way if they want, or whatever ways they can do anything.
Yeah, sure. Actually, you can go to just one site because I do have several entities of staffing, housing, transportation. So, but you can go to my one site and find all of those clicks or links. And that's Lee Robbins, RobbinsRobbins.com. LeeRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsRobbinsR transportation system. You see the link to life coaching if you want to become a certified life coach and help us, you know, help this mega movement, you know, be carried across to your area where you're listening. We will give you the blueprint. If you become a certified life coach, we will help you to take all of these wraparound services and expand it and scale it up to where you are as well. So that's LeeRobbins.com.
Okay. You can reach me. This is Sandy Freese at Sandy Freese. That's F as in Frank, R-E-E, S as in Sam, E, 63 at gmail.com. The business is called Victory from Chaos. I am a cognitive behavioral therapy coach and a neuro-linguistic programmer. My desire is to work with people who are re-entering society and also their family members, women who have gone through trauma. So You can reach me there, Victory from Chaos. I'm on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter.
Very good. Now I'll let the two of you take over and continue talking. And I'm going to stop for a while.
No, we enjoy to jump in. Yeah.
Oh, of course.
No.
You know, Lee, something that I favor greatly is, you know, the studies that I've done with cognitive behavioral therapy, because these labels that these men and women who are our brothers and sisters, citizens, come out with are horrendous. If they don't have an organization such as yours that is going to speak for them, their chances of having any type of job are so so low. What I love so much about cognitive behavioral therapy and what I want to work with people on is to say, you are not your crime. You are not what you've done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is how people may identify you, but that's not who you are. And I think when we start respecting ourselves, then other people will begin to respect us as well. You know, I was a victim as a child and then a victim again in my early 30s. I don't want to be known as a victim.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that belief somehow got in my head. I'm just a victim. And you know, for years it took me a lot of time before I finally was able to shed that belief because it wasn't even mine authentically. So I think them being able to be released, that's the first step. But they have to realize their worth. They have to realize that's not who they are. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I you're exactly right that you know, we need to be able to have more services and resources in that area to help that population. We need to educate police officers when they're encountering someone with dealing with mental illness. It's important that they have some training on this, rather than fearing the person, and because the person is not responding to their commands, or they can learn how to de-escalate. And find out, maybe there can be some records coming up, you know, showing that this person has, you know, maybe on their car license plate has something saying that. But see, but then a lot of their privacy would be in, you know, violated. You know, if somebody knew that they had mental illness and that kind of thing, they might discriminate against them or something. So it's a real sensitive issue. But we do need more education, more resources to help that population. Now, I'll tell you the truth. I have a particular passion for that as well, because my son, who's 20 right now, is suffering from a mental illness. And every day he wakes up, I'm watching him suffer from this illness. And it saddens my heart, you know, especially when I have this mocking voice in my head saying that, listen, you're helping other people, but you can't even help yourself. You can't even help your own. And you know, I'm a faith person, so I'm like, God, you're gonna let the enemy talk to me in my thought like that? And he said, yes. I'm like, what? Yes, I'm not expecting that, and so
yeah.
He said that to me. I said, when did he say that to you? He said on the cross. He said you've been able to save others, but you can't save yourself.
That's right.
This is when God taught me a lesson here. He always did. He always uses these situations to teach me a lesson. And he said, listen, I'm going to stay on this cross, because my purpose brought me to this cross, and my pain on this cross because my purpose supersedes my pain. I'm going to stay here.
Yes.
He said, your purpose
yes.
too, right? Going to supersede your pain. You might
yes.
be going through this. And if there are people out there suffering from mental illness, from any, you know, all kinds of abuses, or maybe even, you know, incarcerated, and you're suffering. As Liana talked about earlier, there are a lot going on behind the walls, and you're suffering. You're like, you know, what can I get out of this? You know, no pain, no gain. And
yeah,
even if this pain is not something you caused, yes, absolutely.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
And you touched earlier on the death penalty, and I want to just bring something up about that as well. There are mm-hmm. certain people that have been waiting on death row for
mm-hmm.
over 20 years, and till they get that notice, it's your turn. Well, many are not even the same people that they were when they were arrested
mm-hmm.
and charged and convicted.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we believe in rehabilitation, I bring this up because I am interviewing someone. I'm also in the process of writing a book, and I'm interviewing
mm-hmm.
someone whose son was executed last year in my home
mm-hmm.
state of Indiana. Now, he wasn't from here, but he was sent here. But he committed a crime when he was a teenager, along with three other
mm-hmm.
teenage boys.
Mm-hmm.
And after being in there for 20 years, he was not he was not the same person. He had a totally different mindset. He had grown.
Mm-hmm.
He had become a very spiritually minded person. He
mm-hmm.
had a lot of other incarcerated citizens coming to him for advice
mm-hmm.
or to talk or to try to figure out how he got where he was at. And his life was snuffed out. The United
mm-hmm.
States lost a good citizen that day.
Yeah. Well, that's because we've become a law-driven country, and there's no grace.
Yep.
It's supposed to be justice and mercy. Right.
And I do say I agree 100% on your stance of this being more about financial gain than about
keeping us safe. It's
right,
not really about keeping
right.
us safe.
It's all about financial gain.
Yeah, because if we want to keep the country safe, then we will help the ones that are coming out. If you can help the ones that are coming out not to get, I mean, to change and to have an opportunity to get in the mainstream, to get a job, to move forward, they're not going to want to commit another crime. And therefore, if you don't commit another crime, you don't have another victim. And if you don't have another victim, then you don't have us, you know, continue to spending money to incarcerate people. And so there are industries, there are businesses, there are, you know, people who are taking advantage of this process, and they're taking tax dollars to pay for their businesses by using returning citizens or people who have been incarcerated to continue to be incarcerated. So we need prison reform. We need to educate society. We need to empower returning citizens. It's important that we do so, because if we're really about change, we will watch them. We'll watch, you know, the real motive behind all this. You know, so I just think we continue to let things perpetuate. I wonder if any of you can remember or just imagine that there was over 30 years ago. You did not have 2.2 million people in prison. Yeah, you know, you had 200,000, 300,000.
Mm-hmm.
2.2 million. It went up to 2.3 million before. So this hasn't always been. And it's not like, you know, humanity just got worse. It's not because, you know, crime has went down since we have incarcerated that many people. Right? It's just what it is, it's been, once this happened, this mass incarceration happened, whether it was intended or not, it is hard to go back to not having that money.
Yes.
It's hard to do that.
Yeah, go ahead. Those in the system, working in the system, in high positions, they do not discourage recidivism because they want people coming back because that brings more money.
You mean they do not?
I think that Lee got dropped.
He'll probably have to call back in again. He got dropped for some reason. What you're saying is they do not discourage the increases in recidivism because of the money part, right?
Correct, absolutely. Yes, I may have forwarded that wrong, but that's what I meant.
It's hard.
Yes, thank you. I'm so sorry I lost you guys.
They actually have occasionally on this radio show. I don't know why it did that, but I will let them know because that's the show. They do ask for feedback.
Yes.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
But Sandy was talking when you got disconnected.
I was saying that, recidivism brings more money. So why would they want to prepare anyone with the tools and the methods that they need not to come back? They're not going to do that because they want them to come back.
Right. Yeah. And we get it. Okay, prisons are created for a purpose, right? There are some people, small percentage of people, who are just not going to play right in society. They're just not going to do the right thing. They're going to be serial killers. They're going to be people like that, and that's the purpose of prison. But the vast majority of people are not that way. They're nonviolent crimes. You got over 60% of the people in prison from drug-related mental illness, lack of education. So what we have to do is, and I've made up in my mind because I'm not one of the people that like to meet about stuff over and over again. As you can see, we bring about change. We just don't talk about it. One of the things that I've taken a stance on and committed my life to is helping people not go back to prison. Right? If you're done time, you're done time. Okay. All right, now let's help you not go back to prison. That's my whole mission. My mission, and also to prevent them going in the first place, like for our young people. So we have programs to help our young people to, I call it the 3P, prison prevention plan, where we have people who are mentors who have come out of prison, who has prison credibility, working with our high schools and at-risk youth and things of that nature, because they got that prison credibility. Hey, you're going to be me if you continue to make these bad decisions. You want to spend 30 years in prison? You got a guy that spent 30 years in prison, came out. When I saw him in the transitional center, I was in there ministering, and I told him, I said, God told me to help you and to make sure that I finance, everything, your housing, your transportation, your food, to finance everything, until you get on your feet. And this person was like 30 years, just started crying, and he was like, how did you know? I was like, God told me that I was supposed to help you. And he came out. He came into our reentry home. He was trying to reacclimate back to society, and even to the point where he would go to my vehicle, which is a It's more modern vehicle, and it's not something what he used to. And he was just trying to put something in the trunk. In my seat, you got to push a button for it to go down. He didn't know how to do that, but he had so much pride, he didn't know how to come back and tell me. He didn't know how to let the seat down or put the thing in the trunk. So he stood there and cried and just was weeping because he felt more secure in prison than he did in society. He knew how that operated. He knew what to expect there.
That's right. And so many are institutionalized. I interviewed another person a couple of weeks ago who said, sometimes I think it would just be easier to go back.
Mm-hmm.
And this person is a fairly young person. They don't have any idea about technology. They don't know. Technology is hard for me, and I'm out here. But it changes continuously, constantly, something new. So when you're not presented with that at any time for years, when you get out, it's like coming into a whole new world.
Whole new and a whole new anxiety. That's what you can tell me. I don't know. That affects their mental illness as well, right?
You may not have any kind of mental or emotional issues the day you are locked behind that door.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time you are released, you are going to have those. Most people will.
Mm-hmm. And they continue to have those things enacted upon them when they go to a job that they're qualified for, and they get the job, and then 2 weeks later when their background check comes, they get fired. And so they're thinking, every time I get a job, I'm going to get fired. And, when they go to particular housing and they put the application in and put their money up, and the people know that they're not going to give them the place because they put it on there, they got a record, they take their deposits or whatever it is. And when you have now, you might have victimized somebody, but now you're the victim. And you get victimized by society, even coming out of prison, being victim in prison, and then coming out to be victimized. At least you got three meals and a cot in prison. Here, you don't even know if you're going to be homeless or not with $25. Right. So our mission has to be, let's help these beautiful people to have better chances.
That's beautiful.
Let's give them better opportunities.
Kudos to you for your work.
Thank God. Amazing.
When you said three meals and a cot, I was actually talking to someone the other day about what I do and how I advocate. And he said he's never been incarcerated or never even been arrested, nothing. He said to me, you know what? He said, I just don't understand why you're wasting your time. Because if I got into a bad situation financially and couldn't pay my rent or anything else, I would think I would enjoy being incarcerated because then I have a place to sleep. I have meals to eat, and I don't have to pay anything. I was dumbfounded. I was actually speechless, which does not happen very often. But in that case, it did.
Well, there are ignorant people out there.
Right, and I think that's part of the process, too, like you said. Yeah. Work with our youth. Parents, please, please work with your children. Talk to your children. Let them know there's a better way. Encourage them to open up to you when something is amiss in their lives.
The Federal Bureau of Prisons, the U.S. Department of Justice, does have they do have reentry programs for those that are soon to be released. They have federal funding and services for prisoner reentry. And it can be found on the United States Department of Justice website. But there are things that people don't know or prisoners don't know when they come out either. But years ago, I remember they used to have, the prisons used to have, or they at least put it down that they had these programs, reentry programs for those soon to be released. But I don't know what they ever did with them because I don't think a lot of people knew about them. So they ended up just letting them go out into the nowhere. But what I was going to say is what they need to look at is in California, they had the three strikes law. And that three strikes law ended up causing prisoners to get life sentences and life without, which they're still serving. That three strikes law is one reason for mass incarceration. Wrongful convictions is another reason for mass incarcerations. First-time offenders getting life and life without parole sentencing is a third one. There's so many reasons why the prisons are so full. And these people, like I say, there's all different circumstances, but they don't need to. And Lee, you mentioned it earlier, that we have an epidemic or a few epidemics in this country, and one of them is mental illnesses. And we have substance abuse issues. So those are two major epidemics. But we also have a lack of role models in this country for these people. A lot of these young people growing up with no role models, they look for one another. They look for support from each other. They all have the same issues. And I believe that's how gangs get started.
As for the family,
not the family so much, but as for the a lot of these other issues that are out there, we need to have leadership, but we also need to network, and we have to do a lot of research, because there are programs out there. There is funding out there for programs like yours. There's also resources for transitional housing, or counseling, or family reunification help, supportive aftercare resources.
Yeah.
And these are some of the things that we have to keep in consideration.
Absolutely, 100%. We just need to come together and unify. They're out there, but they're operating in silos, and, you know, the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. That was part of my assignment working for the state of Georgia as a community coordinator, was to bring people out of silos, connect the dots. I just really believe many hands make lighter work. And, you know, even if we're some of us doing some of the same overlapping things, we need more people to do it anyway. And if we can not be territorial, you know, with our resources, you know, there's just much work to go on out there. And we should be always, if you're going to get in this ministry or business or whatever, however you see it, this you have to do it, you know, you got to be unselfish. Don't treat it like a business. These people have already been manipulated by people who treated them like livestock. They don't need us to continue to make money off of them. They don't need us to continue to treat them like a number. We need to give them family. We need to give them love. We need to help them to see themselves of who God really sees them to be, because that was not God's intended purpose for them to go to prison. I mean, who in the world, when you bring a child into this earth, who's behind, what dad behind that glass saying, oh, look at my little criminal. He's just a cute little criminal. Oh, wow. No, that's not
right.
That wasn't
right.
The intended purpose for the parents on this earth. Certainly wasn't God's intended purpose for them to fail.
Even these prisoners that spent 4 years in college. I mean, there's a lot of these prisoners that spent years and years in college. Now, you know how difficult it is struggling to try to work on school vacations and during the summer and trying to put yourself through college. You go through 4 years of college and all of a sudden one mistake and here you are getting a life sentence without parole for a first offense. These are other things that we have to look at. And like you said, no one is born yet, but we live in a very dysfunctional country. This country itself is dysfunctional, divided. We can't even get the Republicans and Democrats to work together to rule the country. And here they're bickering back and forth like little kids when we're looking for grand old leadership, strong, healthy leadership from our leaders. And what are we getting? Crap.
Yeah. And that's why we have to, you know, really control our world, empower ourselves. help, you know, work together and unify with our communities. You know, if mom and dad is not acting right, the children got to come together, you know, and,
yeah.
and it's important that we do not leave it in the hands of other people for our destiny.
Yeah. Yes.
Because
and
man
child,
will fail you. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
A child that does not have a father at home, the father becomes the streets. A child that does not have a mother at home, the mother becomes the streets. That's why I believe there is so much gang affiliation out there. And you know, I'm not saying all single parent homes are this way. But I'm saying that many people are led to the life of gang affiliation because they are trying to be included in something. They want to be loved, and they're promised, we respect you so much, and then the minute something happens, they turn their backs on these people, and these individuals that have suffered from childhood now suffer further. So it's just, it's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Amen. We have another caller on the line. Do you want to state your name, please?
This is Chinupa, sister, calling from South Dakota on the Pawnee Indian Reservation.
Chinupa Buhamani from South Dakota. Would you like to say anything, Chinupa?
Yes. You know, in response to the young lady's behavior of expressing more on the mentality of gang, South Dakota had that in the past. You know, we dog soldiers stepped up and aided a lot of the neighboring towns, such as Rapid City, Sioux Falls, and Pierre, Mitchell, even the reservation itself here at Pine Ridge, had a number of gangs that were brought in from street, you know, areas such as Denver, Colorado, Albuquerque, New Mexico, Kansas City, Minnesota, the Twin Cities of St. Paul and Minneapolis. A lot of these people brought people down that were affiliated with Bloods and Crips and you know, Vice Lords and just enough Latin Kings, a number. And as the young lady stated, that when the young brothers and sisters that were involved and invoked themselves with this gang mentality, when things went dismay for them, she's right. The gang leadership and the gang people left them astray. They just didn't bother trying to support them, take care of them. This is why some are still incarcerated to this day. Just a few days ago, I was on South Dakota public broadcasting with a guy by the name of Brian Jacks talking about the current situation this federal government had implemented to, you know, the mentality of indigenous people in our state of South Dakota. But one of the things they were questioning is what is the purpose of our youth, you know, getting involved in certain extracurricular activity? And that kind of alarmed me. It kind of a little upset me because I said, well, let me express something to you, Mr. Jack. South Dakota has known for that, to try to find ways to, you know, degrade Native people, children, et cetera. But the point that you don't understand is that because when you're faced with an unhealthy circumstance because of the way the colonial policies are implemented in the state and in the country of America, you know, the crash term of America does not justify the actions of means. But the purpose is, people in families, they try to socialize with things that are comfortable for them to release a lot of the pressure that they have encountered when families didn't do the policy and then, you know, showing family value, okay? And this is not a discouragement to the listening audience on my sister's show, but it's to bring some awareness to what goes on in Native country, because a lot of times, the Native people have always took on a structure of invoking themselves with, you know, traditional discipline, traditional, you know, elements that help pave a way for our children to be artists and do things with beating, singing on the drum, taking part in the oral communities of extracurricular activity. So South Dakota had the nerve to make this remark about, you know, our kids not really taking on proper, you know, you know, involvement to meet the standards where stimulus funding would be as a necessity to help them improve, you know, whatever civic improvement needed to be done. I said, no, no. The message that he finally caught the glimpse, I said, a lot of them, it's like the gangs, I said. And this is funny that my sister has you on the show about gangs. I said, South Dakota had all these gangs come in, and they were strip mining our children to get them to participate, to sell drugs and do things heinous to the communities, but they were never aimed at the purpose of why they were being, you know, affiliated with these people. And they're human beings just like us, you know. And if you look at during the time when Rodney King was beaten, all the colors of the gangs came together to stand with, you know, the behavior of how they acquitted the police, and then they all attacked the whole, you know, area out there in the west of California. While a lot of the native people are still incarcerated at early ages from the capacity of 15 to 21, and they were influenced by these gangs, you know, to participate in their activity. But then when they got caught and ended up, you know, in court proceedings, man, they would neglect. So Mr. Jacks didn't see that piece until I expressed it more on an open note for him to kind of calm him down. And finally it kicked in because there was one group that we stood against. Actually, there was two groups that we stood against in South Dakota in Rapid City. They were called the Warlords and this other one called Lynch Mob, because they took that lynch mob name from the way white folks were hanging our black brothers and sisters back in the time, and that was the mob that did that. So they called it the lynch mob. So these kids used that name to, you know, circumvent the responsibility of them affiliating with these gangs. And I like the way, you know, you're all putting this into words. It really does my heart good. And, sister, thank you for having me. I'll will it back to you all.
Yeah, I have to say thank you. Thank you for your comment.
Thank you.
We better pick up on this another time. Actually, we have 2.5 minutes, but we have to pick up on this another time, too. So maybe we'll have another show on this, because it's important that these things become aware, to everyone becomes aware of these issues as well.
Absolutely.
Yes. Well, Lee, I want to say one thing. I want to say thank you tremendously for the work you're doing.
You're welcome. Thank God bless you so much. You know, it's like it's not even work, and my vocation is my vacation.
That's it. When you're passionate about what you're doing, it doesn't seem like work, does it?
Yeah, it doesn't at all. And so you guys continue to do what you're doing, getting the word out. I think this is what we need to do to bring about cultural change, you know, getting the truth out. Get the message out, and thank you so much for you guys having me.
Your information, all of your information.
I didn't catch it. I didn't catch what you said. I'm sorry.
If you can give your information one more time before we close.
Sure.
We have a minute and a half.
If you want to reach our staffing company, our ministry, our transportation system, for returning citizens, life coaching, you can go to the one website. It's Lee Robbins, that's robbins.com. And you go there and you can get all those connections to those other websites and wraparound services.
Okay, Lee, we'll be having you back on again. We just need to figure out a time and a day, and I can, you know. Chinupa Gluhamati has a show that comes on every Friday and Saturday, 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 5 o'clock. Is it your time, Chinupa?
Yes, gentlemen, this guy that's on there, you're welcome to come on our show. It's, you know, on behalf of Shedding Light, my sister Leona gave us an opportunity to have our show, and you're welcome to come on. At 5 Mountain Time, it'll be 7 o'clock your time out east, and you're welcome to come on, because we have a lot of important issues, different things going on, and yes, the affiliation and being connected with everyone else will be helpful. Even the other lady that's participating on today's show, you're welcome to come on. So at
Sandy,
5 o'clock Mountain Time, 7 on Eastern Standard Time, and I'll let you all go. I got to get back to work here cutting wood.
Okay,
thank you, sister. Love you all.
Lee, what state are you in?
Thank you.
I didn't even ask. What state are you in, Lee?
I'm in Georgia. Yep,
So it would be 7 o'clock mm-hmm. our time. Sandy, you're in Indiana. I think it would be an hour. What is it, an hour before?
Yeah, you and I are on the same time, Leona.
Oh, okay. So it would be 7 p.m. our time. So he's invited
both of you
on his show. And he will be on tomorrow. Today's Thursday. He'll be on Friday and Saturday, 7 o'clock Eastern time.
It would be the same
call-in number, the 657-383-1630, and he would like to pick up on that, what was going on today. And I thank you both for being on. Thank you so much. And, Lee, we'll have you back on again, and Sandy can figure out the time and day and let me know, and we can schedule it again.
Sounds great.
Thank you, and everyone, have a good evening. Appreciate it. Thank you, Sandy.
Lee Robbins and Sandy Freeze. Thank you so much.
Thank you.